Boy, girl, that's 50-50. Let's test your skills for real. What number am I thinking of?
3. 11. 25. 3 again. Bulbasaur. What the hell is a Bulbasaur?
So weird. Why would I be thinking about Pokemon at a time like this?
Yep, definitely a telepath.
Welcome back, everybody, to Central City Underground. This is CCU number 103, and we are here to talk about The Flash on the CW. This is Season 4, Episode 12, Honey, I Shrunk Team Flash. I'm Julia, a.k.a. The Alfie One.
And I'm Jada, a.k.a. Story's Voice. And this week on The Flash, Barry spends some quality time with his fellow inmates at Iron Heights as he tries to once again be a beacon of hope. Knowing that this may be the only thing that they can do to help, Team Flash takes up an investigation that places them squarely in the crosshairs of Central City's newest bus meta, Dwarf Star. Meanwhile, Joe and Cecile have a few small concerns of their own. Meta pregnancy. It's a thing. And now Cecile can read minds. Run, Joe, run. This was a great episode. I really enjoyed it.
I did too, yeah.
Actually, you know, I enjoyed it so much, I gave it 8.5 in beginning bazookas.
Oh my God, that's hilarious, because I gave it 8.5 untested in beginning bazookas. Yes. I almost gave it 8.5 pink elephants, but then I thought, nah, I have to use the embiggening bazooka. Untested, of course.
Untested, yes. Oh, I was going to give it tiny metahumans, as I think Dibney might have said, but I just wanted to say embiggening.
Embiggening. It is fun to say. Embiggening.
Yes, it is a real word.
It is. Yes, somebody looked it up in the Central City Underground Facebook group. So I don't know what those writers were thinking, but it is a real word.
It exists. This episode was directed by Chris Pepe. I think that's how it's pronounced. This is his directorial debut for The Flash.
Oh, so, cool.
We haven't seen from him before, but I enjoyed it.
Well done, man. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a great episode. We have a newbie and a veteran as writers this week. We have Judalina Neera, and she's done 26 episodes of The Flash already. So
yeah, she knows what she's doing.
Yeah, she's got to do it. And I think that might have been possibly part of why it was such a good episode. She's familiar with this. Yeah. And the newbie is Sam Charlson, and he's
never heard of him.
Right. Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. I got my notes messed up. Actually, he's done 3 episodes before.
Oh.
He's done
okay.
3 episodes.
Well, then I have heard of him.
We have heard of him. I can't remember which episodes he did, but I think I'll remember him now. I really enjoyed this episode.
Well, why don't we talk about some of our favorite parts of this episode?
Well, what was your first favorite?
My first favorite thing about this episode was the solid balance that we finally got between the humor and the drama and, you know, everything that's going on in their lives. It's so hectic. They still found a way to keep it light and funny without going overboard with the silly. And the darkness didn't take over either. I thought it was an excellent balance.
Amen. I felt that exact same way. I nearly had a completely similar thought. It wasn't one of my favorites, but I'm glad you brought that up, because as I was rewatching this episode, I had that thought. I was like, wow, this is balanced well. There's plenty of silly and there's plenty of pretty serious stuff, but nothing outweighs the other. And yeah, the balance was great. Totally agree. My first Flash fave is Cecile. Just Cecile.
Yeah.
So much fun this episode, and she really shined. I enjoyed it. She almost glowed.
I totally agree. And you know what? This redeemed her from the trial episode where she was totally useless as Barry's defense. I agree. She was really funny, which we haven't gotten to see that actress play up her comedic chops quite yet. And it was excellent throughout the episode. And she had a really good episode.
I enjoyed her greatly. I hope they do more of that. I hope they can center her a little more in some of the storylines, which I'm sure they are, considering what's coming up.
I would think they're going to, yeah. Because they didn't really use the telepathy to its full advantage this time, so I feel like in the future they're going to.
I was thinking about that as well, and I'm so happy that they didn't really push all the complicated ins and outs that come with telepathy. I have to say that I've had quite a few issues with John Jones on Supergirl. And I think that's what happens if you try to use a character with telepathy in a grounded sense, because it is such not a grounded ability. But I thought the balance they struck yet again was perfect. She didn't have to worry about any kind of control or anything. She just, I'm reading this person's mind and here's this information. It was great.
She was getting a kick out of it. I loved it.
She was. That lady right there, she's a thief.
She's been stealing staplers. Excellent.
Good stuff.
Well, we can talk a little bit more about that in our next segment. But okay. My second Flash fave was actually something that I read after I watched the episode reminded me of this. And I loved that we got back to Barry's superpower being hope. He showed Big Sur what it was to have hope again. And that was exactly the reaction that I was hoping we would get from Big Sur after all of that. You know, I didn't think he was going to stab Barry into sleep or anything after Barry failed to get him out of prison. But because he seems like he's just a really big teddy bear, you know, he seems like a good guy. So I loved that theme of hope coming back, because especially after that trial episode, once again, where it just felt like there was no hope for Barry, to be reminded that Barry Allen is full of hope all the time was a reminder that I needed as well.
Yes, very well said. Yes, that something we all needed. And they did a great job doing it. I enjoyed that as well. In the beginning, or for the greater part of the episode, quite frankly, I was thinking, yes, Barry, you were full of it. I mean, hope. And it almost got to the point where it might have been a little annoying, but it never did. And I credit that to great writing. Thanks, you guys. Sure. Yeah, that brings that balance line through again. They did a great job with that. It was like, okay, Barry, you're pushing this guy here. You know, it's a big guy in jail, and he doesn't want to deal with your hope right now. But as it turned out, he did, and it turned out great. I enjoyed that as well. Yes, yes. And speaking of balanced things, my second thing that I liked was simply Dwarf Star, the new bus meta. With what his abilities are and the way they wanted to portray him, he could have easily been hokey, or there are a thousand ways they could have gone with this character, and I think they did it just right. They wrote the character. We don't actually get a lot about him, his story or anything. We just know he's a bad dude that's stealing things. And that's all we needed to know, and that's all that it was about. They kept it simple. They gave us the villain. Credit to the actor as well. I forgot to see who the actor's name was, but credit to the actor as well. He did a great job. It was was it overacted? Was it underacted? You know, the more I talk about this episode, the more I think I really like
it. Yeah, that actor's name is Derek Mars, which is a great name. Yeah, so well done, cool. Derek Mars.
Thank you, Mr. Mars.
And I do remember seeing him in the bus when we got those couple of shots of the flashbacks of the bus. I remembered there being a tall, bald guy on the bus after we saw him. I went, oh, that's right. He's one of them.
Oh, you know, and I think I'm going to have to go back and look at that to see if, are there any other people that you can see? Do you remember out of chance?
I think we saw some people in the background, but I don't know if we got a really good look at any of them. We've seen so many of them that we did get a good look at. So I have a feeling that they did that on purpose. They didn't show us all 12 clearly quite yet. Shall we move on to
Power Points? Yeah, sure.
Power Points. All right.
What's your first PowerPoint?
Well, we have to start with Cecile, the newest of the powers in our group. So we talked a little bit about this already, but it's pretty early on in the episode we discover she has telepathy. What? Why telepathy? Who knows why, but the best that Caitlin can come up with is that she has latent dark matter that has maybe been in her since the first particle cell accelerator explosion, which I guess could happen. There are plenty of people whose powers manifested much later than the day of the explosion. So who knows how many people are out there with latent dark matter just hanging out, waiting to become some powers. But Cecile, for whatever reason, gets telepathy. And she thinks it's going to be a really great thing for her and Joe's relationship. And any of us who have ever been in a relationship probably would guess that you don't want to know every single thing that your partner is thinking at all times. And it turns out Yes. She's absolutely wrong about that.
Yes, I mean, I wouldn't want my partner to know everything I'm thinking, and I can imagine. Now, my thing is about the, and I like to call it meta-pregnancy.
Sure. Why not?
My thing about that is, if the initial particle accelerator explosion that released the dark matter onto Central City was an explosion and did exactly that, and it spread out, it hit all of Central City, that means all of Central City has the potential for latent dark matter in their brain.
Yeah.
Or in their body, excuse me. Does that mean there are random ladies in, like, maternity wards or at home or whatever, just doing, like, crazy meta stuff? Just all around, we just don't ever hear about it?
Maybe.
I mean, I can see how it might not be on a large scale, but it would be super weird if it was just specifically Cecile, which of course sets up someone else's possible pregnancy.
Of course, yeah. No, I would bet that there are metahumans all over the city that we don't know about and that we will never know about. It has been established there is a black market for metahumans, which I would have to assume has dealt with some metahumans that we have not yet heard about.
That is so true. I forgot about that. I would really like to explore that. I doubt that we'll have time in this season or maybe next season or something. I'm not sure, but I would love for them to explore that. Or
the black market?
The black market and extra metas.
Oh, sure. You never know. I mean, with the way this is going, we very well may see more of the black market thing going on. Because if Amunette is dealing with Warden Wolf and it's got a prison full of metahumans, it's trying to sell you. Yeah, you never know.
And that's what she does in the comics. So hopefully they'll stay faithful to that.
But as far as Cecile's powers, I really kind of enjoyed the way that they used it. Like you said, she was having so much joy in using her powers, whether or not it was joyful for anybody else but her. But usually when somebody gets telepathy in movies and TV shows, they're immediately totally overwhelmed by all of the voices that they hear and, you know, it drives them crazy and they can't shut it out. And she was having a ball. She was standing out there in public just amazed that she could hear every single voice, and it didn't seem to bother her at all.
And I thought that maybe later on in the episode, she'd get to the point where she's like, I can't take all these voices, I can't shut them out, but she never did. And I kind of like that. I enjoyed the way they portrayed that. Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll do that in the future. We'll see. But my prediction is more in line with her powers being useful to the team with another certain telepathic person that we've been dealing with lately. So I'm hoping that she can be of real use to the team, especially after that letdown in court.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We'll try and forget the court debacle. You know, one of the PowerPoints that I have is Dwarf Star. Of course, we have to talk about Dwarf Star.
Yeah.
I liked it. I liked the way it was portrayed. I got some questions, but I do enjoy the way it was portrayed. I don't know. It got a bit techno-babbly for me for a second when I guess they were trying to explain what he was doing. I enjoyed the expression of it, but I wasn't really certain what was going on.
I didn't follow the way his gun or I guess it wasn't really a gun that it was actually him, right? It was like he would, because it seemed like he was pulling something out of his jacket every time he would shrink or embiggen something. And so for a while I thought, oh, is he using some sort of device to do that? But then I think, no, it was just him, because he's a metahuman, right?
Correct.
Okay, yeah.
He just had that mindset. I think that was a great writing choice as well, both the writing choice and the way he was portrayed by the actor, because obviously this was something this guy was used to, so it's not like he was getting used to his powers or anything. He just would use his powers. He had pockets, and he was smart enough to know he needs to keep his pockets full of everything that he might need. I mean, come on, if you could shrink things?
Right.
Wow.
Throw cars and helicopters at them? That's nuts.
Awesome. Yes, that's great. I'm going to throw everything at you. But my question is, though, Yes, if you throw a car, if you throw a helicopter, it's more than likely to explode because of the fuel. Now, what happens if you carry that thing in your pocket? Like, it doesn't explode from being in your pocket like a tiny poof?
Well, I assume everything in the vehicle shrunk as well, so there's like a minuscule amount of fuel in there when it's in his pocket.
Like a proportional amount of fuel should make a proportional little fire in his pocket being jolted around the front. But no, that's just, I guess it's just me being. But it was really cool the way he did that. I like that. And again, like you said, the way he would just pull a gun out and it would be big. And
yeah, he was very clever with his weapons. And his weapons were absolutely anything that he wanted to shrink.
Menagerie of shrunken stolen items was wonderful.
So my next PowerPoint that I want to talk about is the moment when Teeny Tiny Vibe and Elongated Man tried to use their powers, which were affected by them being teeny tiny, and they actually were not able to use their powers in the same way that they could when they were much bigger. You would think it wouldn't change so much. I didn't think that Ralph was going to be able to stretch himself back to normal size, but he didn't seem to be able to stretch very much at all when he was shrunken. And Vibe as well seemed to lose his kind of depth perception when it came to how far he could reach himself.
I had a serious problem with that as well. Oh, I'm not sure if you had a problem. For me, that was a problem.
I had a problem with it. I thought it was an interesting choice for them to all of a sudden kind of be bad at using their powers when they were tiny. I think it would take some adjustments for sure, shrinking to that size. But yeah, I wasn't quite sure why they had the trouble that they did with their powers when they were small. But boy, were they adorable and hilarious.
They were great. That Lego set? Yeah.
Oh my God, why do they still have that set up for Iris's death?
Yeah, who holds on to that?
Take that apart, or at least set it up, you know, with the win. Instead of Iris still being in Savitar's clutches.
But it came in handy. Why do you guys have Lego sets?
I said, why do you guys have a giant Lego set when really it's kind of a normal sized Lego set? Remember, Ralph, you're tiny.
Ralph is great. Ralph is great. But see, that's what I'm not so certain about. I don't understand why Ralph couldn't stretch, but he could be squashed.
Yeah, and was apparently sticky like gum.
That was so funny. Awesome. You would think he'd be able to stretch, and you would think Vibe would be able to portal. So I'm thinking that maybe it's a matter of like a mental block almost.
They were discombobulated.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. That's my canon.
Yeah. I can imagine that would be quite a shock being that small all of a sudden.
I had under PowerPoints Barry's lightning. Now, the reason I have Barry's lightning down is because I was confused about something. Barry's lightning was able to be recorded when he escaped jail and set Big Sur free. Was that because of a particular kind of camera? Or was that simply because he was caught on camera? Because he had been on camera before when he stopped the riot. I assume all of the poker games that he had been cheating in.
Well, I think he usually waited till the camera moved away before he did those things. They've always shown him taking a look up at the camera moving away, and then he does his thing. So I think he's been pretty careful about it. And even this time, he did wait for that camera to move away. Now, I don't know what kind of camera Warden Wolf put in there, that secret camera. Perhaps it was something different. And I'm still not quite sure why he really felt like he needed to put a camera on Barry's cell. But we can come to that later. So I don't know. I mean, I think it was just a matter of bad timing.
Right.
Because they haven't established that Barry's lightning can't be caught on film, right?
I don't think so. That's I had actually a question mark beside it in my book because it's a little, I don't know, It's a little confusing. Can you see Barry's lightning when he's streaking by? Because that's what everyone, you know, that seems to be something that people have seen and observed.
Yeah.
And other times, maybe it's a matter of speed. Maybe when he's super, super fast, the lightning is suppressed as opposed to when he's just kind of running. I don't know.
That's my guess as well. Yeah, the faster he goes, the less of his lightning you can see, perhaps.
Okay, I'll take it.
Okay. I have wondered that as well, because even when he's, you know, playing poker and cheating with those guys in prison, do none of them feel that, like, breeze of, you know, we had all of the those talks about needing paperweights in Star Labs, because every time he speeds through, every paper in the place goes flying, but nobody feels that when he's moving that fast next to them at that close proximity to him. I don't know. I've had that thought in previous episodes as well, when he's doing his super speed thing, but moving as if he's, you know, taking his time, and right. Nobody ever notices.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm glad you said that, because I forgot I'd had this thought. I think what triggered the thought of Barry's lightning was when he was kneeling in front of the cards. I don't know. It just, how fast was that? Because he was just there for a minute, and it was like lightning in a little swirling ball around him. And it's like, I don't know. But, you know, I think I can be okay with that, because much like a video I saw earlier today, it was just one of the magicians that distracts you as he talks to you and takes your watch and your tie. And you always think, you know, really? This guy's touching you and removing things, how are you? That's the way the human mind works. Distraction just totally gets us.
Sure, and they're not expecting a metahuman to be playing cards with them at that moment. So I also really loved that he was using his cheating powers to help Big Sur win and not just himself.
Yes. Yes, I'm glad that that happened, because as soon as he started to do it, I was like, okay, Barry's going to go. I thought he was going to reshuffle the cards or something. And I was like, cheater. That's so cheater. Oh, he did it for Big Sur.
I was really surprised that Barry Allen would cheat at cards until I realized that he was helping Big Sur.
Now, the big pile of pudding that was in front of him might say that off camera he might have been doing a little...
Oh, sure. I'm not saying he didn't help himself at all. He got so much pudding. And prison pudding is better than outside of prison pudding.
Yeah, unless you're the trickster. I don't know. I think I would have stayed away from the pudding after last week, right? You know?
What is he thinking?
we'll talk about that later, but come back to bite him. That's it for PowerPoints that I've got. Anything else that comes to mind for you?
No, I think that's just about all of them. Well, let's dive into the episode.
Alrighty, let's do it. Like I said, it was great. I really enjoyed the beginning of the episode when it was just some Cecile and Joe time.
Yeah.
Joe just looked happy sitting there. He was just, I don't know. Joe's great.
They're such a great couple, too. I love the two of them together. And the more we get to know them together, the more I like them.
You know, and it feels as if their chemistry grows the more we get to know them, so that it's a great parallel. It's like, wow, you guys are getting closer. Your chemistry's working a little bit better. We're liking you a little bit better. This is great.
Yeah.
But she starts listening in on his thoughts, unbeknownst to both of them.
Yeah, she doesn't even realize that she's doing it at first. And their reaction to it was fabulous. And I would be right there with Joe. It would be a little unnerving to all of a sudden realize that you can't hide anything from her. That's nerve-wracking.
Yeah, and he lucked up, I think. That could have been any random thoughts that he was having at that moment. Right?
No, I don't think that Cecile has anything to worry about with him. I think he really, truly does love her and, you know, will do anything for her. So, you know, the way they handled that was great. I thought with the talk they had at the end, just, you know, bearing their souls to each other. And, you know, it's not that they do have anything to hide. It's just that it's really hard to be that vulnerable with somebody, even if it is the person that you love and are going to marry and spend the rest of your life with. It's still really, really hard because we're humans, you know? And these are a couple of very human characters that I love.
And what made me love Cecile even more is that the only reason she was happy and the only reason she had no problem with listening in on Joe's thoughts was because she loves him so much, she didn't even question She didn't question anything about their love. She was like, I'll listen to your deepest thoughts, and no matter what it is, it's not going to change anything. I love you. I was like, oh, Cecile, you're great. You're great. Because Joe had apprehensions about it, which I could understand, because I would like to think he's seen a lot darker things than she has.
That's probably true. We've seen most of the dark things that Joe has seen, so.
Yeah, right. Like, Rod. Like, I believe he's probably not over Grodd yet. So I could see why he'd be skeptical, but she wasn't. She was all in. She was like, meh, yeah, I can read your mind. I still love you to bits. You guys are awesome.
But they did need a little bit of help. And the second that Iris said she knew somebody that could help them, I thought, yes, Dr. Sharon is coming back. Yes, and she did. Dr. Sharon Finkel is back. I'm so glad they're still using her. I hope that we see more of her throughout the season, because this poor woman just has no idea what is wrong with these people.
She's going to need a shrink when the season's over.
I do wonder if they're going to use her in any bigger capacity, or if we just get these little tidbits of her helping the team out every once in a while. It would be cool if toward the end there was some larger part for her to play, perhaps, but we'll see. Or if she just ends up finding out, you know, who they are, and I don't know. I just think that could be really fun and funny if done in the right way.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I'm sure that that's going to happen. The way they've sprinkled her in, and I have to admit, each time she's just more and more flustered. But it's getting to the point now where it's going to be soon. They're just going to be there, and they're not even going to be talking to her. Whoever's going to be there, and they're just going to be saying whatever, and I'm sure she's just going to throw her hands up. She's a great character. I like the way they've written Dr. Finkel.
I also really loved the talk that Iris had with Cecile later in the episode, where Iris told Cecile that she needed to stop worrying about what Joe was thinking and to find out what he was feeling, which involves having an actual conversation, sitting down and talking about what is going on. And that led to that lovely conversation that they had at the end, where Joe admitted that he was just afraid to be vulnerable. He didn't want her to hear all of his stupid, deep thoughts. And so she opened up and told him that she hates his, is it his aunt's or grandma's noodles? Oh my God, the noodles are terrible.
Grandma has the noodles. Yes. She shouldn't be anywhere near a walk.
I just thought the whole thing was so well done, well written and acted, and just a lovely moment.
I thought it was wonderful. Two actors given wonderful material that really pulled it off. Again, my only concern was you can't talk about somebody's grandma's cooking. But Joe loves her so. Two things about Joe. Well, actually, I'm sorry. One thing about Iris, that speech that she did, the conversation that she had with Cecile was great. And for me, I totally saw Joe's daughter there with Joe his level of Thanksgiving. It's like, oh, yeah, you're Joe's daughter.
Absolutely.
But we did see something rare this week.
What's that?
Some Joe advice that backfires.
That's right.
Toward the end of the episode, when Joe plants a little seed in Barry's mind, you know, when you come to a wall, you got to find a way to get through. And you see Barry thinking,
literal walls keeping me in this prison. Yeah, I wonder if Joe realized what he was saying to Barry, what kind of seed he was planting. I don't think he did.
No. Yeah, I don't think he did at all. That was just pure fatherly love. And Barry just took it to the extreme.
He used the wrong metaphor. Too on the nose, Joe.
Which makes me wonder, how was Barry able to get out?
Oh, he phased through the walls.
Why couldn't he do that before?
He was trying not to get himself in trouble. I thought he had... Oh, that's right. He was waiting for Cisco to hack into the camera system. Oh, that's a good point. I forgot about that. So either he wasn't worried about that, or he maybe avoided as many cameras as he could. Still got caught, though.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, I forgot about that. It's a little detail that,
Hand wavy. Yes, just a little detail.
Well, before we move on from Joe and Cecile, A while back in our Central City Underground Facebook group, I created a poll to find out what everybody's predictions were for Cecile and Joe's baby. So since it's been a while since we've dealt with the baby, I just wanted to bring this poll up again and see where we stand. Right now, there are 16 people who thought that it was going to be a non-meta human baby. So right now, those people, including former co-host Joe Zettelmeyer, are correct, assuming that the baby continues to not have meta powers. And looks like 5 people thought it would be a meta baby with unique powers. 2 people thought it would be a meta baby with speedster powers. At least 1 person thinks that there will be some sort of a tragedy that will cause them to lose their baby, which I hope is not true, but it could be. You never know. And Tony Caselli thinks they'll name him Bart. So I think Tony is out of the running now because we know it's a girl, although, you know, people pick whatever names they want to pick for their babies. But I don't think Joe and Cecile are going to name their baby girl Bart.
Yeah, I was trying to think of what female name could be shortened to Bart, and I just really couldn't come up with anything. Bartries? No.
I'm not even going to try.
Yeah. We're going to have to do another poll sometime soon about the baby.
Absolutely. Well, we've started talking a little bit about Barry in prison, so why don't we continue with that storyline?
Alrighty.
So he discovers that Big Sur says he's innocent, says that he was a mistaken identity, and Barry wants his team to take the case. Big Sur does not want him to. Harry, who I wasn't expecting to be so enthusiastic about it, says, yeah, let's take this case. I think he's gotten so fed up with not being able to figure out the thinker's plan that maybe he needs a little distraction or something that he knows he can do.
Yeah, I too was really surprised by Harry's compassion for Barry's needs. Harry was so frustrated this episode, but he spoke up and said something I guess I hadn't even really thought about. I mean, hey, we haven't been able to do anything for Barry. This is all that he's asked of us. We have to do this. I was like, wait a minute. Do we have the right wells? What's going on here? But yeah, that was cool. So, so he asked Team Flash for a little help.
And Warden Wolf warned Barry to stay away from this case. He said the last person who tried to help somebody else prove their innocence got stabbed when they failed, and that person was upset with them for failing. Like I said earlier, I didn't think that was going to happen to Barry. Of course, you know, if it had, he's a speedster, he would have healed really quickly, so that would have outed him if he hadn't outed himself in this episode. But I was really happy with the way that they dealt with Big Sur. And in that whole arc of him finding hope again, I just thought that was really lovely for that character.
Yep, I enjoyed Goldberg's performance of Big Sur. It was great.
You know, we haven't really talked about Bill Goldberg playing that character. He's from the WWE, right? And which, as we all know, they're actors. So
they're acting. Wait, what?
They're actors. And he's really good. I think he's been really, really good in these episodes.
Yes, I do too. I do too. I enjoyed his portrayal much. Yeah, I was wondering if Big Sur was powered somehow.
Maybe he has some latent dark matter just hanging out.
Maybe. That's a new thing. I got a little bit of latent dark matter in him. I know he's a thick guy, but when Barry hit his shoulder, he's like, whoa, hey, you got a hard shoulder. I was like, I wonder if that's like superhumanly, you know.
No, I think he's just all muscle.
Yeah, he's just solid. And for a short while, I had thought that he might have been in league with Dwarf Star somehow. And that's why he was telling Barry, no, don't worry about this.
Oh.
Because he didn't want something to be found out. But no, he was just an innocent, good guy. I like that.
Yeah, I like that too. But we got that line from Wolf in that conversation that came back later. Everyone here is a monster. And
yes,
when he said it, I kind of just thought he was being a jerk. And then it didn't really occur to me, even though I know what's coming with with Warden Wolf, but it didn't occur to me. Oh yeah, he's talking about himself, you know. That's, right. And that's when he said it again at the end of the episode. I was like, oh yeah, yeah, you are gonna be a monster, aren't you?
Yes. Like, I wonder if they make him a meta, but either way, regardless, he's definitely a monster.
Yeah.
Not too quick.
I am looking forward to / not looking forward to what he is going to bring to the metahumans, because I think he's probably going to be pretty terrible.
Yes, I hope so. Because so far, I've truly enjoyed the actor's portrayal of Barry Wolf. He's great, menacing. He's perfect.
Yeah, love him. He is so good. Richard Brooks.
Richard Brooks.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a great Warden Wolf.
Yeah, he doesn't have to do much. Just, you know, he's got that voice going for him, and he's super menacing.
I get it. Super menacing. Yes, but he did. He showed his true colors halfway through and by the end of it.
Did you know that's the name of next week's episode? True Colors?
Oh, is it?
It is. You
know, I saw the preview, but I didn't see the name of it. Okay, yeah. Cool.
So I bet we will see more of his true colors.
Oh, yeah.
Bum, bum, bum.
I actually get, well, no. I was going to say we might get some answers, but I know how they are.
I think we'll get some. We've gotten a couple of answers in this episode, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you know, that's very true, especially with the, I think even after Warden Wolf tricked Barry and then imprisoned him in the metahuman population, it still could have been up in the air as to what his intentions were and what side of the metahuman fence he landed on.
Sure.
But after that phone call, the guy's just a dastardly jerk.
Yeah. Now, did it seem like that was the first time he was calling Amunet? Because he did say, you told me to call you when I wanted to do business. Do you think that means this is the first time he's calling her, or just reminding you and our audience that I am calling you when we do business?
I think that this is by far not the first time they've done business, or at least, okay, might be the first time they've done business of this type, but you don't know Amunet randomly. You don't meet her in the grocery store and right. strike up a conversation, you know? So, like, he's had some dealings with her somehow. I wouldn't be surprised if he hasn't sold her metas or sure. done the whole roulette thing where it's like a metahuman fight club or something, you know? Yeah.
You know what, though? I wonder how he explains their absence. If he is selling metahumans to her, like if Barry goes missing, Iris comes and visits him every day. It will be obvious eventually, you know, they could probably get away with excuses after a day or two, but she's going to figure out that something's going on if Barry doesn't show up when she shows up. And if there have been other metahumans disappearing because they're getting sold to Amunet on the black market, what is his excuse there? How does he cover up? Or is he just counting on nobody missing them?
Yeah, one way I like to look at it is if you have the ability if you have the power to contain all those metahumans, I mean, and I know it's a power granted to him by the state because it's, I'm assuming, a state-run facility. But if it's a private facility, then that's even worse because he really doesn't have to. Anyone. But even if it's a state-run facility, you have your hands on lots of metas, and you deal with illegal meta doings with Amunet. I'm sure he can come up with some way, meta or even normal, to be like, just to fudge the paperwork. You know? This guy had an accident, he died, or hey, you meta, erase that guy's brain, you know, or something like that. He just looks like he's so dirty that anything's possible.
Yeah. Man.
I enjoy it.
So I wonder if Barry is going to discover what Wolf is up to, if he's going to have to break out, and does he break out the other metas as well? Is the goodness in Barry Allen that wants to save people, even if they're bad people, is he going to get them out of prison somehow? Was this exactly what the Thinker wanted?
This is where my my thinking of the Thinker and Barry shifted because I believe that Barry went from being the Thinker's target to just another component.
Oh, sure. Maybe he's a tool. Absolutely.
Oh, no. I always knew that he was a tool for the Thinker, but somehow I thought Barry might have been an end game somehow, revenge, and not purely a tool. This feels like he's purely a tool for just another piece to be moved around. Maybe his biggest asset as far as his plan is concerned, but still just another tool. And how is that going to really wrinkle Barry's pride, you know? Oh, it wasn't even about me? And when he escapes, is that it? Like, is that the whole thing? The Thinker just busting everybody out of Iron Heights?
No, he's got something else coming up. What is it that keeps calling it? The Enlightenment?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yes, something like that. Yeah, right?
Enlightenment. Yeah, I think he's got something much bigger that he needs these people for. Now, who knows what that is and how all of their different powers combined will work for him. But even if Barry is just a tool to the Thinker at this point, which I don't know is totally the case. I think that won't inhibit Barry from rising up and defeating him in the end. Right. I think that'll be all the more reason for Barry to prove that he messed with the wrong speedster.
Right. Whatever wrench that is thrown into the Thinker's plans will be what spurs Barry on to defeat him. Yeah. What's that wrench going to be? What are his plans? Oh my God, it's killing me.
But I don't mind that we've gotten away from the Thinker and the Mechanic for a couple of episodes either. Because it has been two episodes now where we've not really dealt with them, and they're sort of on the periphery, but I don't mind that, because these have been really good episodes.
They have, and it was just done very well. They gave us heavy, heavy Thinker. It was so plot-driven, those first several episodes of the entire season. Pretty heavy on the Thinker, but this break, quote-unquote, from the Thinker in these last two episodes was done so well. I didn't even notice it at first, but when I heard Wolf talking to Amunet on the phone, I thought he was calling the Mechanic.
I had the same thought.
And it reminded me of the Thinker and Mechanic. I was like, oh, that's right. We hadn't even seen those guys. But it turned out to be Amunet anyway. But it was a good break and a well done one.
So we ended that storyline with Barry and Big Sur before Barry was caught. We have to mention that Barry took Big Sur to China.
Hey, sometimes you get the movie ending.
Sometimes you do get the movie ending. And at first I thought, well, what's he supposed to do there with absolutely nothing? You know, he's still in his prison clothes. And I thought, oh, well, if he's going straight to that monastery, they get rid of all of their worldly possessions anyway. So he's all set. He can just go there and take a vow of silence and disappear. And no one will ever hear from him again.
And his alibi is rock solid. He was kidnapped out of prison and taken to China.
It's true.
What's he going to do?
With no money or ID, so it's not like he could hop a plane back and turn himself back in. He might as well just go join a monastery.
And the thing is, he's not a bad guy. We have no idea that he's a bad guy. Like, they never said at all he's a bad person.
No. So, but you know what? I think he's been in prison, for 15 years? So I think he's probably going to have a much happier life joining a monastery in China than trying to reintegrate into United States society after 15 years of prison
institutionalization. Yes. And 15 years is such a long time. Things change so fast. Yeah. Yeah. I really enjoyed his movie ending.
Yes. Our Meta of the Week storyline, Dwarf Star. This was the fun and funny part of the show for me, all of this stuff. from the shrinking of Vibe and the elongated man, they were so, so funny when they were tiny. They were exactly the right amount of funny. And everybody's reactions to them were also really funny. You know, Harry, you're just as annoying when you're that size.
Yes. Little Ralph has to go to the little boy's room.
Yeah, it was all just super well done.
Yeah, it was. I'm watching your emotions on an IMAX.
Yes.
I enjoyed it tremendously. Dwarf Star.
They did track him down. They were able to find out that his name was Silbert Rundon.
Rundon, and not Birdie.
not Birdie.
Did not go by Birdie.
It is Bert. Bert Rundin, not Rundine. The E is silent. And I loved Iris's comment that all of the villains that they run into have names that sound like they came out of a comic book.
Yes.
Yeah.
Gorilla prison is worse. They throw their scat at
you. They throw scat at you.
Yeah, it was, yeah. I would love to see if this was a result of the two writers collaborating together. I would love for them to do another episode because the humor was on point, wasn't too much. Never trust a mustache.
I am with him on that.
You have a sexy goatee. What he has is a creeper mustache. Yeah, all the comedy. There's so much. I mean, I guess I could just read the script at this point of all the comedy said, but it was on point.
Now, last week, you had mentioned that you thought an easy fix to this entire scenario would be for them to just contact Ray, call up the Legends and say, hey, Ray, can you come over here and unshrink everybody? So a couple of things about that. Good call, because that was the first thing they said as well. We tried to get a hold of Ray, couldn't get a hold of Ray. They didn't explain why. I don't know why, but whatever. Hand wavy. So option one is out, and that's when they apparently called Felicity as well, who told them that some of the Dwarf Star had actually been stolen. And it's unfortunate that we didn't get any Felicity smoke in this episode, but that's okay. But it turns out that having Ray there wouldn't have actually helped, because they needed the same power that had shrunk them to embiggen them again because of the way that it worked. It wasn't just a shrinking of the cells or whatever. It was something about energy and yada yada. But unfortunately, having Ray there wouldn't have done any good anyway.
Right. And I'm very, very happy that they explained that. Those few lines sewed into it made all the difference. That made me very happy. Because, I mean, I understand that it's using hand wavy to explain hand wavy, but it was done in just the right amount. So it was like, oh.
Yeah, okay. I bought it. Yeah.
No Ray. And we got to do this. All right, let's go.
Yep. So Harry came up with a solution that he thought was going to work. He took the old Speed Force bazooka and refashioned it into an embiggening bazooka. And I was absolutely astonished that he had no desire to test this equipment before shooting it at Sisko and Ralph. What is he thinking? He's supposed to be the smartest man in the room. And, like, try it on a pencil first. Like, what are you doing? And, of course, it backfires, and they are headed toward complete cellular explosion in 10 hours.
Yeah, nothing much.
It's, like, the worst possible outcome. Why wouldn't you test that?
No, I was concerned because and they did a great job of portraying this over the last several episodes since the trial and all. Harry has been getting really frustrated, very, you know, pent up, it seems. And it was kind of bothering me because it wasn't explained. But then they explained it. Yay. I love when they do that. You know, halfway through, he's talking to Sisko. And Sisko's like, oh, you're mad because you think you're not smart enough to go against the thinker. And I was like, oh, that explains it all. And then Harry immediately, and I think this is why he didn't really take the time to test it. Because once Harry kind of realized that, once those words were said and it was made real and the realization hit Harry, he was back to Harry. All right, then let's test some science, you know. But Harry, you shouldn't test the science on your friends, though.
Right. Yeah, he was a little cocky with that.
Yeah. And as it turns out, too cocky.
Absolutely too cocky. He could have killed them.
Right. So hopefully that's a lesson he'll learn, but fingers crossed on that one. Yeah.
But Tiny Sisko did help him figure out that they needed to get blasted with the Meta's powers again. So all they have to do is go find him and, you know, try to get in the way of his powers. No problem, right? And I absolutely loved that entire scene where they confronted him there and he was throwing cars and helicopters and Hummers and things at them. And they were, Sisko and Ralph were riding around on the drone. It was so good.
It was. It was good on several levels. One, oddly enough, two nights before I watched this, I actually had a conversation about, wouldn't it be cool if we were small enough to fly on a drone?
Yes,
and when I watched it, I was like, oh my goodness, look at this, the drone flying. So that was great on a personal level. But another one, and I might have even said this already, I just enjoyed the idea of that Dwarf Star just thinks that way. I just have my pockets full of crazy stuff. I mean, what if he pulled a building out and thrown at him, you know? Like
he could have. He shrunk that building down at the beginning of the episode. They could have had a skyscraper thrown at them.
Because in the first I was like, well, why did you just shrink that building down? But then explain that's what he does. He steals advanced technology and sells it on the black market. But come on, you didn't tell me in the middle of the day that brand new building, there was no one inside.
Oh, I think there probably were people inside, and they are tiny. I think they're really tiny. I wonder, did they make him unshrink all of the stuff in his apartment? Like, if there were people in there, are they still in there? Oh my god, that's terrible.
So many tiny corpses living around his apartment.
Oh no! Oh, that's terrible. Oh, those poor tiny people.
And we saw Cord Industries again, which is awesome. Always love the name drop of Cord. But is Cord, I could see Cord developing a process to reverse that with the information that Team Flash has about what's going on and how to reverse things. I could see them reverse engineering a way to fix that. But that's, I mean, come on, that's
maybe
millions upon millions of dollars just gone like that. You know, and the lady who was, I guess, the representative of Cord Industries, that was a great scene. It was so funny. I really hate this town.
There is no way that anyone is going to break. Oh.
Yeah, everything. What she said, they had super speed detectors or whatever it was, and vibrational control detectors or something for freezing lasers.
She did not think about a shrink ray.
What was even funnier is she said that because there's a problem with technology being stolen and stuff, and Central City was like number two, only behind Star City.
Yeah.
Yeah, these places just have issues.
So the boys figured it out. They hitched a ride in Harry's pocket when they lost their drone. And I wondered, how did they get up there? But then they explained that, too. Vibe had breached them into Harry's pocket. So he can actually use his powers farther than he thought. Maybe he just needed a few minutes to, or a few hours, I suppose, to figure it out. But that was brilliant when Harry just sort of opened himself up to get blasted. And somehow it only affected Cisco and Ralph and not Harry. Hand wavy.
Yep, I don't even know what that's about.
And also so Dwarf Star, I guess he doesn't have control over whether he is shrinking or embiggening something, because he was intending to shrink Harry, but instead embiggened the two already shrunken dudes. So maybe if he hits something that he has already affected, it just does the opposite thing.
Exactly. Right. Maybe it's not maybe it's not binary like that. Maybe not. It's not on or off. It's just always on. And if it's hit, it shrinks. If it was already shrank, it regrows. Excuse me, embiggens. Yeah, I was thinking about that, too. That's the only way I could see that working, because
otherwise, Harry should be very tiny.
Exactly. But
we'll let it go. We'll let it go. Yes, it was such a cool scene.
Yes, it was a great scene. The way Joe came up in there, all Law and Order style.
Yeah,
you know?
He did. How long has it been since he got to say that?
Yeah. Oh, and that was right after Iris caught him with the power dampening collar.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. She was pretty tough in that. Yeah,
yeah, I like it when Iris is out in the field every once in a while. Unfortunately, though, Bert is not going to confess. I don't know if he's got something against Big Sur. He just got a real kick out of the fact that they caught him instead. But I think they went about that the wrong way, just saying, hey, confess to this one particular crime 15 years ago. Of course he's not going to do that, because that's obviously exactly what you want him to do. You got to lead him to that in an interrogation room downtown, you guys. Like, come on. They get ahead of themselves sometimes. They get too excited, I think, about, you know, being good guys, and this time they failed.
You know, in that exact vein of thought, I can see why they do, because it's hard to separate their lives as Team Flash from everything else, because so much of their life is taken up by being part of Team Flash. That for them, those boundaries that should really be there, that need to be there, get blurred so easily. But I was also thinking, how are they going to explain this to the cops? I know Joe is there, but like they need to explain everything that just went down, and some pretty crazy things just went down.
You know, I think since they've brought Cisco onto the Force as their like metahuman detector specialist, I feel like they maybe have an arrangement with the cops. I mean, Joe is a cop. Joe is one of, you know, he's on the Force. So I think that there's probably an arrangement there where like, this team of people can take down metas if they need to, because the cops aren't going to be able to do it on their own, and then they will hand them over to the cops. And I don't think they would need to lie about anything that just went down. You know, the cops are aware of metahumans, and...
But I was thinking, but isn't that the definition of vigilantism, or is that a word, vigilantism?
not like, if it's police approved.
Yeah. Hey, this ain't Star City. You're right. Okay.
I just think that the police maybe acknowledge that they cannot handle a lot of these metas without the help of another team of people. And maybe they're, you know, looking the other way. Maybe they are vigilantes and they're just accepting the help. I mean, we haven't seen any cops complaining yet. And they shouldn't, because every time metas go crazy in Central City, they destroy the police station. So...
Very good point.
Maybe they are welcoming the extra assistance right now.
And you're right. And again, like I said, that is a significant difference between Flash and Arrow. The Flash is embraced and celebrated.
He was just given an award by Captain Singh.
Totally true. Totally true. So I guess they would look the other. I mean, I only said that because it was like, well, the cops are pulling up and like, hey, Joe, isn't that your daughter right there with that big sci-fi gun shooting somebody? I don't worry about it. You know? Whew, Central City. Wow.
I loved the connection that I believe it was Harry made, that none of this is coincidence. The fact that the guy that they were trying to prove his innocence, break out of prison, or be released from prison, the guy who actually committed the crime is the metahuman that they're dealing with this week. What are the odds of that?
Astronomical, I'm sure.
Which is exactly why it is not a coincidence. And I love that Harry has caught on to that. And that just, it's another reason why Harry is so smart. Figured out that the thinker really is, you know, pulling a lot of strings, or has at least orchestrated all of this to happen, or knows exactly how this is all going to happen. And he really, really wants to get a step ahead of him.
And one line that caught me, that made me think, and made me think about two things. When Dibny said, yeah, I mean, what was the purpose of all that? They just want to shrink us? Like, oh, hey, I wonder if that comes back. But that seems like that might have been, I mean, see, the thinkers really got us questioning, because like, how much control over the situation do you have? Was that the purpose? That seems so random. Like, there's no way you could have known that they'd be there for you to, for that guy to shrink them. But then I thought, well, Caitlin was developing a cure for shrinking. Is that going to come up later? Will that be like, she never finished it, but she has it. Will that be some kind of plot point later?
Maybe. And was that
too by the thinker? Oh.
I don't know, but I have a feeling we're going to be seeing all of these metas again. They're going to come back, you know. Barry's in prison with a bunch of them right now, and I think that, like I said earlier, I just can't wait to see, like, it's a puzzle to me, and I can't wait to see how the pieces are going to fall together, all of these different powers and how they'll be used for whatever the Thinker's plan is.
Whatever it is. And right now it's so much going on and so big and so vague, we don't even have a hint of it. I don't know if I like that or not. I like it, but I don't know if I like it. I do have one question about something that happened in the episode that I didn't really come to a conclusion on my own. Would a parachute really work from that low to the ground?
You know, depends on how open it was to begin with. Maybe, yeah, I don't know. Was it a tiny parachute to start with?
I mean, yeah. I mean, it was tiny, but I guess he made it bigger, but I don't know. I don't know. Maybe if I had more information about the exact specifications of, you know, the amount of distance it takes to fall before a parachute is effective. But I wasn't willing to go through all that. I was just wondering, you know.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Even if he was like on the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th floor, which I don't think that building was that big, and he was in an alley, which gave him no room to drift, he was falling pretty fast. He'd have to shrink it. Embiggen it, put it on, open it, land, take it off. I guess that's just a matter of hand wavy. It's just picking apart the episode, which I don't really want to do because, again, I really enjoyed this episode.
Yeah, it was good. The only other question that I had about the episode was why they didn't seek Cecile's help in trying to get a confession out of Dwarf Star. I thought that might be something that they would try to do since she could read minds. You know, she could see whether or not he had done it. But again, maybe they're saving that power in her for a future episode, something bigger.
Yeah. And I feel that's completely what they're doing too. But having said that, you would think that in a place where meta humans are may not be socially accepted, but their existence is accepted and acknowledged and is scientific. Proven that if you can get in trouble for using your meta powers, if that can be evidence enough to put you either in Iron Heights or get locked away, you know, in somebody's secret underground pipeline, then you should be able to use those abilities to exonerate yourself or possibly extract information. She has lots of credibility. She's the DA.
Right.
And if they came up with scientific, like had the team run up scientific proof, you know, hey, look, we've got the scientific proof that right now, during her pregnancy, by the way, she's pregnant, everyone, has given her this ability, and we can prove it. Hey, judge, I can read your mind. Oh, my God, you can read my mind. Okay, interesting. This guy did it. I mean, but I guess that's a lot to go through, and we've seen her.
Yeah, well, and it's, I mean, you can see from, you know, Barry Allen why people don't want to out themselves as metahumans. You know, it's, you're taking a huge risk if you let the world know that you have superpowers, essentially, you know, because there's still a stigma about it. There's still a lot of people that are afraid of that, regardless of what your power is. And people may just assume that you're going to use your powers for evil instead of good.
Yeah, very true. I hope they do something with that information, though, because all I can say, and this is me overthinking it, this is me being in their world and thinking possibly a little too much about it. But for some reason, I envision like a young lady that's pregnant that's just going through it, you know, with meta abilities. And she's like, oh, my goodness, what's going on? Am I crazy? You know, without the support that Cecile has. And it's like, if they make that announcement to the general public, that could possibly save lives or at least improve someone's life somehow. Like a meta pregnancy, it's a thing.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Well, what do you say we get to some feedback?
That sounds great.
We have 3 written feedbacks this week. I'm going to start with one from Kimmy. Hello, CCU. First, you guys are doing a great job hosting the show this season. Thank you, Kimmy. Your commentary caps off my Flash week. While there has been criticism of this season, I have thoroughly enjoyed the season, with the exception of one episode which shall not be named.
Mmm.
I am curious. I want to know which episode she's talking about. I have a thought about Cecile's new power. The explanation of how she acquired it is so beyond hand-wavy, even the plot device gods are rolling their eyes. Anyway, now that Cecile has the ability to read minds, perhaps she can help the team by reading Marlee's or even Clifford's mind. Or they can start working on the cerebral inhibitor and test it on Cecile. Clearly, Cecile having this power is so out of left field, there's no way DeVoe could have anticipated it. The team definitely needs to use it to their advantage. I look forward to your thoughts, and good week, Kimmy. Thank you, Kimmy.
Thanks. We appreciate that.
That is such an interesting thought about testing the cerebral inhibitor on Cecile. That is not something that I had thought of. And it's really smart. Oh my God, test equipment before you use it? That's what a novel idea.
Yeah. Yeah, who would have thunk? Yeah, that's great, Kimmy. I like that idea. But first we have to create the cerebral inhibitor.
That's true. They do. Which hopefully they'll start thinking about all that stuff they learned in the past about the future.
Yes. Which means we might see Tracy again, which would be great.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah, she hasn't made an appearance at all this season.
No, we've had a mention, so we know she's around.
Right, and we have the cerebral inhibitor coming up, which she's a part of, so that's good. But yeah, I totally agree with Kimmy that there's no way DeVoe, I don't believe that there is any way DeVoe
could
have
been. How could he?
That has to be too random. That has to be too random.
Yeah, nobody could have predicted. I mean, anybody who doesn't have powers right now, you can't predict which person is going to have powers next week. You know, there's unless he has literally seen the future, which I don't think is the case. This has to be a wrench in his plan that he won't see coming. And if they can use her telepathy somehow to thwart the thinker, I think that will be excellent.
Yes. I agree. I'm all down for that. All down for that. We're good. Well, thank you very much, Kimmy. We have another piece of feedback, and I will read that. And this piece of mail is from Justina, the green butterfly. Yay! Hi. This is your Eye in the Sky green butterfly. This episode was fantastic. A little of everything. Humor with tiny Team Flash and gestational telepathy, an interesting metahuman, cool special effects, and action scenes. Barry continues to try to be a hero in prison. A grand cliffhanger causing me to beg for more. 10 out of 10 big gulps. I forgot about that. Yeah. It means big gulps. Way more than the four that Ralph drank, right? now for a few random thoughts. There's something timey-wimey going on here. Because you guys said on the podcast when discussing the preview last week, you said this episode would have an easy fix in calling in Ray Palmer. And they said they tried to find him, but couldn't. Which makes me think Flash's writers traveled in time, listened to the podcast, and went back and wrote that in for you guys.
I think that's exactly what happened.
And accepted. Yes, ma'am. Number two, Julia. You are driving a hard bargain on my DNA defense, saying most of the DNA should be on Barry's suit, but he didn't leave his gloves behind when he phased through the thinker's cell, leaving his hands exposed. They had a scene where they showed police scraping under Barry's nails.
I love that we are still talking about this. And secondly, you are absolutely right. He took his gloves off, and I had forgotten about that. Remember, we had that question about why in the world he would leave his gloves laying on the floor when he was tricking the thinker into letting him out of that cage. And there it is. Now his hands are exposed, so of course he has his DNA under his nails. Dang it!
Good stuff. Yep.
Justin, you're absolutely right.
Just see what you guys doesn't say. Number three, Wells is so smart, but he makes decisions too quickly. He really needs to stop and think it through sometimes. Have a super week. Love, Green Butterfly.
Thank you, Green Butterfly. You are so right on so many levels.
Yes, I love the great feedback from Justina. You're so right. I think you really thinks it all through, doesn't he?
Yeah, and true about Wells, too. I think he just got cocky in this episode. He is super smart, but he needs to take a moment and think before he acts.
Yep, absolutely correct, Justin.
So I have one more written feedback here from former CCU co-host Tony Caselli. Tony said, "Hi, Julia and Jada. Okay, I kind of loved this episode. 8.35, Mayor Bellows is a jerk in prison too. Or wait, maybe 8.35 prison pudding is the best pudding? The goofy, shrunken Team Flash dudes was fun. Some of the logic was a little hand-wavy, but if I want hard science logic, I'll go watch Nova. Plot A. Loved Dwarf Star throwing models of vehicles at them and then embiggening them as they flew. Super cool idea and effect. The big coincidence that the guy Barry needed was also this guy that was part of DeVoe's plan, right? Plot B. I was so scared that Big Sir was going to become bitter and angry from disappointment of not getting out that he would become a big enemy to Barry. I was so surprised with the ending where Barry sped him away to his fantasy place. Did not see that coming at all and absolutely loved it. That character is awesome and I wish we could see more of him. Also, bad warden. Plot C. She can read minds? Okay, the had some latent dark matter energy from some mild absorption of it years ago, activated by pregnancy, turns her into a telepath, is ridiculous. But it's a wonderful kind of ridiculous. I now want her to go through a whole series of new powers. Every new phase of pregnancy gives her a different power. It just keeps changing for 9 months. Then when the baby is born, he is like Jack-Jack from The Incredibles and has a whole bunch of those. Also, this has to be a setup so that when Iris gets pregnant, she can have powers, right? I mean, in the comics, they have speedster kids, so it makes sense that if she gets pregnant, she might get some of that temporarily. Finally, I'm with Harry. I can't wait to see what DeVoe has in mind. Why are these coincidences happening, and did he orchestrate them? I hope they learned from a couple seasons of The Bad Guy Plan seems a little freaking weak and have made a masterpiece where all of his crazy bus meta stuff fits together to make an awesome evil scheme from DeVoe. That's it, y'all. See you next week. Tony.
Yeah, thank you, Tony.
Thank you, Tony. Yes. Oh, my goodness, yes. Yeah, I love the theory that that Cecile could have changing powers throughout her pregnancy. That's hilarious and could be really fun. And yeah, if the baby ended up absorbing any of those. And I wondered if, because they did test the baby and they said that it didn't have any meta powers or there wasn't any dark matter in the baby. So I'm wondering if that'll stay the same, if that will be true, you know, if it will be born and then she won't have powers anymore, the baby's totally human and normal, or if maybe the baby will absorb some of her powers while it's gestating.
Right. Yeah. They were, like you said, they were scanning for dark matter. Not necessarily from meta-human. So maybe the baby is just a meta without the dark matter.
Maybe. Ooh, maybe. And they may be setting up that Iris will get some powers when she's pregnant, but maybe she won't. Maybe her babies will have powers. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, we'll see when and if that happens on the show, because I know that that has happened in the comics, but we know that they don't always do the show exactly like the comics.
I have so many thoughts about that. I'm going to be a little disappointed if this wasn't a setup just for Iris's pregnancy that may or may not be in the future. Mm-hmm. only because if it wasn't a setup for that, then it was just weird. Funny and well done, but weird because it sets a precedent for everybody in Central City who might be pregnant might have powers, which is just weird just to do randomly. And B, I mean, that whole mysterious girl writing the Speed Force stuff, I mean, that's got to tie in. I mean, it blatant ties. It has to tie in.
Yeah. Well, and if she is related to Barry and Ira, if she is their granddaughter, say, then, of course, they're going to have kids because those kids have to have kids. Or what if she's in the line of this baby? Maybe Cecile has this baby and this girl is her granddaughter or something like that. You never know where they're going to go.
Yeah. That's what I like about it. They seem to be doing this well. They give you just enough information so that you're not starving for information.
Sure.
But you really don't know what's going on yet. Yeah. That balance is being struck well and I'm enjoying it.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for all of your feedback this week. People have excellent ideas. So keep sending us feedback every week. We are on goldenspiralmedia.com. And as always, you can find us in the Facebook group Central City Underground. If you haven't joined us there yet, please do. There's always a live discussion while the show is airing. And that's a lot of fun. there's also a lot of articles that are posted, cool stuff about the show and about the comic. So please join us. So join us next week for episode 13 of season 4, True Colors. This is Julia.
And this is Jada.
Signing off.
Have a good one, guys.
Are you a podcaster who loves creating great content but gets overwhelmed by the audio editing process? Are you a business professional or an entrepreneur that wants to start a podcast but aren't sure where to begin? You need Pro Podcast Solutions. Pro Podcast Solutions has a robust suite of services to equip podcasters and help podcasters create better content than ever before. Visit ProPodcastSolutions.com today and find out how you can get your first episode produced for free. That's ProPodcastSolutions.com.